And we return. It's today's topical occurrence, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And today is Thursday, of course. The legendary Joe's Stone Crab Restaurant started in 1913 as a Miami Beach lunch counter. It's the 100th anniversary of its opening. And joining us now is chef, author, and syndicated columnist, my friend Linda Gassenheimer. Linda, just thinking about those crabs dipped in mustard sauce, clarified butter. Oh,
I saw you just now gorging yourself. We've got a studio full of
speaking of gorging.
Yes. Right?
You didn't do too badly either.
No, Linda.
Are you saying something to me?
No, Linda.
Well, think of a legendary Florida restaurant. And what comes to mind? For me, of course, it's Joe's Stone Crabs. And waiting at Joe's means two things to many of us. Of course, the long waits for a table, but another is the reputation for an excellent waiting staff. And Deanie Kaplan Lorber is the author of a book called Waiting at Joe's. And she's going to give us an inside look at what goes on there. And let's welcome Deanie. Hello, nice to have you.
Nice to be here, Linda. Thank you.
Great to have you. And also with us, Stephen Sawitz. He's Joe's chief operating officer and the great-grandson of the founder, Joe Weiss. Stephen, more than welcome. You came loaded with stone crabs.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for having the stone crabs, too, on the table.
It's good. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Join us. Do you have any questions or comments about Joe's stone crab, or maybe for Deanie Lorber? Call us at 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Email
is open, radio@WLRN.org. I think it's working, radio@WLRN.org.
I've got a question for Deanie.
Excuse me. Could we say hello to Fred?
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Oh, thanks.
Is Fred there?
Fred, are you there?
This is old chopped liver right here.
Yes, hey, Fred.
Joining us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker, and he's joining us by phone this time. And you can read Fred's wine suggestion for my Dinner in Minutes column in today's Miami Herald. And also, his wine column is in today's Herald. Fred, are we going to be drinking today?
We're going to figure out what kind of wine to go with stone crabs, logically enough.
Sounds good to me. Did you have a question for Deanie?
Yes, Deanie, yes. Why would you choose to write a book about Joe's stone crab when you're a vegetarian and don't eat crabs?
That was supposed to be a secret. There is no other place that I've been to eat that's like Joe's. It's the place where everybody wants to go to celebrate,
well, the sides
to be
too.
A part of. And is in terms of the food, there's nothing like everything from start to finish, from the salad to the key lime pie is very special.
Okay. Well, Deanie, your book, Joe's Waiting at Joe's, of course, it's a play on the word waiting. What's going on with the waiting there, the staff?
Well, actually, the code name was always going to be Waiting at Joe's, the story about the waiters and not the wait, and the publisher thought that was too long, but that's really what the essence is. They do not take reservations at Joe's. They never have. I don't think they ever will, and Steve will confirm that, I'm sure.
Steve is sitting here smiling, right?
But because they don't take reservations, it's part of the game. It's part of what you do is you stand by and you wait and have a drink, and you can sit in the courtyard, you can have hors d'oeuvres or whatever, and it's a lovely experience. But this is not the story about the wait. This is the story about the waiters.
Well, and so many of them been there for, 30 and 40 years, Stephen?
Many of them have, yes. We've had some since, 1968.
And their children are now working there.
Oh, yes. In some cases, grandchildren.
Amazing, amazing. Well, I want to ask you about this thing called roll call. That is, we have annual interviews for the wait staff. It's famous. Tell us about it.
I think Steve could probably tell more than I can, but the interesting thing that I found about roll call is that it is open to anybody. It's men and women. It's all sizes and shapes, and you have to have a certain dexterity in order to make roll call.
Yes. Well, roll call has been going on since I was little, so probably even before then. And what we do is, since we're closed every single summer, we want to know when we're reopening who's coming back to the restaurant, so that when we open in mid-October, we have a roll call to see who's coming back. And then we also inform the wait staff and the kitchen staff, et cetera, what the new policies are, who came back, what the insurance issues are, and, you know, profit sharing issues and things like that. We want to, it's a great time to have a homecoming, so to speak, where everybody, you know, feels good. And then we have speeches and we have, you know, professionals come in and give the staff the status of their accounts and what the new health insurance laws are and what the benefits that we're providing. We really have to do that.
In addition to that, isn't that the time when new people are trying to become waiters?
Well, then there's another roll call soon after that. And that's when the new people come in. They line up outside in the alley, typically. And one by one, they fill out their forms. And then a lot of them are dressed up really nice, et cetera. But they sit in the main dining room and we have coffee and Danishes for them. And then after that, they, one by one, we call each person individually, and we have a staff of people who are, our wait staff, seating captains and maitre d's, who interview one by one those people. And there's a tray carrying thing too.
I was going to say there's a special test.
Right.
Dini, did you want to tell us about
that?
Yeah,
I, to me, that's the fun part of it. Yes, they are interviewed as
it can be fun.
Well, but it basically shows you who can and who can't. And
right.
Even the strongest guys, from what I've been told, sometimes cannot hold it the right way.
And she's holding it.
You've got to be held in one hand.
Some of the strongest women can't either.
I know.
It's amazing.
Well, this is not television. This is radio. So we have to explain where your hand is.
Basically, if you hold your hand out, when they come out of the kitchen,
and they're holding it up high.
They're holding it
on
up
their
high,
shoulder.
And it's
and they're
very
balancing.
Heavy.
And they're balancing hot things and sharp things.
And heavy
too.
Things. Heavy crabs.
Oh, yeah.
The crabs are heavy.
So they have to be able to carry this heavy, heavy tray.
And that's part of what they have to pass during roll call.
So, what are the other things, other than having to carry the tray, what are the other characteristics that you look for?
Well, I can answer that.
Okay.
Well, I think their work experience is very important. And how long they've worked at different places and the level of service that the servers have provided. The other thing is, tell us, not just the standard questions, tell us about yourself. I want to know a little bit more than just where did you work and how long did you work there. Sometimes you throw in oddball questions here and there just to catch them, to see how they speak, their diction, their appearance. Those are very important things. And if they smile. I mean, that's part of the deal.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we just said that it's your 100th anniversary, and congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
It's an amazing feat in this restaurant world. So many restaurants are gone before they're open, practically.
It's true.
The history of Joe's can be sort of compared to the history of Miami. Can you give us some of these examples?
Well, Miami has had a very colorful history, and not a long history, but if you go back to like the 1910s, 10s and 20s, Miami Beach was a haven and a neutral place for all the gangsters from all over, like Chicago, New York, et cetera, Philadelphia, and the gangsters used to come and R&R on Miami Beach, and so we were neutral. There was no infight, there was no fighting, there were no,
they
gun
had
wars.
Leave their guns at the door? I mean,
pretty
the
much.
Neutral area.
Maybe. I don't know what the laws were back then, but I know that Al Capone
was there.
And a lot of colorful people, the Meyer Lanskys, which was a little bit later on, and the interesting J. Edgar Hoover also came to Joe's at the same time.
I think what's really interesting is that, that era, of the mafia, of the FBI being in Joe's the same night, of the president being in one corner, of the history has to do with equal whites rights and women's rights and homosexuality and the cocaine wars and drug wars and celebrities and trysts and everything. And that's the history of the beach, of the world, and of the, of everybody really in growing up over the past 100 years.
Right.
And Joe's has lived through all that.
Watergate too.
Yeah, Watergate too.
Amazing, amazing. Well, we have to get back to this thing that we've been gorging ourselves. And I do admit it. On these wonderful stone crabs and all. And let's talk a little bit about this. You have something here besides stone crabs on this tray.
Yes.
What is it?
Okay. I brought the Alaskan king crab. And claws.
They're so sweet. They're big, beautiful ones.
Right. We've been using those, and we had them on the menu. We put them on, I think Brian found them about 5 years ago and during another shortage. And we wanted to have something, a great alternative that you could serve hot or cold, that goes with the mustard, that's fairly easy to and available to get. So
there is a shortage now of stone crabs, is what you're saying?
It appears to be. And the price reflects that, but also the catch reflects that.
And what's causing that?
You know, that what we believe is that the octopus had a lot to do with it, but this past week we've had such great, heavy-duty weather with lots of winds and stuff, and it's churning up the water, and we have a new moon right now, so it's not as bright in the water. So we think, and I've seen the production tick up a little bit, so every little bit counts. And it looks like North Florida's even picking up a little bit.
Great. And now you mentioned that mustard sauce, so tell us, what's in the mustard sauce?
Well, these are all really healthy things. Like, okay, I'll start
with the mayonnaise.
Let's start with the mayonnaise.
Or is it the cream you want to start with?
Well, you hit two of the healthiest things I can think of. We have 3.5 teaspoons of Coleman's dry English mustard. That's one of the ingredients. Mayonnaise, Worcestershire sauce, like 2 teaspoons of that. 1 teaspoon of A1 steak sauce and maybe salt to taste, and then 2 tablespoons of light cream. But it's on you can find it on the web.
Right, and I'm going to put it on dinnerinminutes.com.
And that's enough for about 4 people, right? Right.
Yes, four people. Sure. We make it by the gazillions of gallons at a time.
You sure do. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and my guests today are Stephen Sawitz, COO of Joe Stonecrab, and Dini Kaplan-Lorber, author of Waiting at Joe's. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guests today are Stephen Sawitz, Joe Stonecrab's Chief Operating Officer and great-grandson of the founder, Joe Weiss, and Dini Kaplan-Lorber, author of Waiting at Joe's. They've been giving us a very interesting inside look at this Florida legend as that restaurant celebrates its 100th anniversary. Well, it's dinner in minutes time, so I thought for dinner in minutes, we'd stick with the shellfish. And we're going to make some Key West shrimp and tropical coleslaw. Now, for those who may not know, the Key West shrimp are really plump and juicy, but they're pink before they're cooked. So that's how you'll know you're getting the real one. And for this recipe, I've just cooked them in beer, Key West style. So you just put them in their shells. You bring the beer in a saucepan, bring it to a boil, add the shrimp, and as soon as the beer comes back to the boil, take it off the heat. Remove the shrimp and then just lay out a layer of newspaper, put it on the table, and let everybody dig in, just like they do in Key West. And I have a sauce, a mayonnaise sauce, which is mayonnaise, mustard, and key lime juice. But maybe we could use your sauce now that we know what it is, Stephen Sawitz.
It's for sale.
It's for sale?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I always thought that was a secret recipe. Now you're telling us how many ingredients are in it.
It's only secret to us, Fred.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's a breeze to make homemade coleslaw these days because you can buy the cabbage already shredded. You mix in the supermarket. I added some mayonnaise and just a little vinegar to make it. Or if you're in a real, real hurry, dinner in minutes, buy coleslaw and add some pineapple cubes to it to make a tropical slaw. Well, that complete recipe is at dinnerinminutes.com. And another very quick and easy dinner is herb-crusted grouper with hot, spicy brown rice. That's in today's Miami Herald. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, let's drink.
Well, first I want to say hi to Stephen. It's been a long time. Nice talking to you.
Likewise, Fred. I didn't realize that you were gone. You were away from us.
Well, it's 40 degrees here and spitting snow, so we're having a good time.
He loves that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love it.
You're a good guy.
Anyway, good old Joe's Stone Crab. The start of the season always brings back fond memories for me. One thing I remember is that for years, my good friend Bob Hossman, kind of a Renaissance guy who's written food reviews and wine columns for the Miami Herald and the Sun Sentinel and a lot of other papers, used to host a lunch at Joe's, and we would try several different wine matches with the stone crab to see which went best. And I guess the overall winner was Robert Mondavi's Fumé Blanc, which is a California Sauvignon Blanc white wine that's aged in oak barrels. That's why they call it Fumé Blanc. And it had nice, crisp citrus flavors, but they were made richer by the oak aging, so it was really a nice match. Well, I also remember the time a winemaker hosted a similar tasting at Joe's in which we tried a red wine, a French Beaujolais Nouveau with the stone crabs. And I guess I should say, in my humble opinion, that was one of the worst wine food pairings I ever had.
I can't imagine that with stone crabs.
Yeah.
It was just too red and too sweet and that sort of thing. Anyway, of course, when you're doing fine wine food pairings, you also have to consider the sauce that goes with the food. And at Joe's, of course, you have the two main choices, the melted butter, which goes nicely with a big buttery California Chardonnay, and Joe's, I guess, no longer secret, if it ever was, mustard sauce, which went better with the sort of citrusy Fumé Blanc. But today, I think there would be a lot of other choices as new wines become popular. The wine from Argentina called, the white wine called Torontés, which has spicy lychee flavors, is a great match for crabs with that mustard sauce. Or a French Muscadet, which is light and tangy and very dry, is also a nice pairing for the stone crabs. And, of course, when you come to the famous key lime pie for dessert, I'd pour a kind of sweet, tart, white Gewürztraminer dessert wine with that.
Well, Fred Tasker, you just led me right into my next question. Key lime pie. We've been eating this key lime pie here, and it is so good. It's very, very cold. I mean, do you keep them frozen at the restaurant?
We actually do. After they're baked, we put them, you know, we let them air cool a little bit, and then we put them in the freezer. And then before they're served, we let them come down a little bit, which is, you know, to get a little heat so that it's softer.
All right. So you gave us the secret recipe for the mustard. Now you're online here for the key lime pie.
This is going to be tough. Okay. The ingredients for the key lime pie, we have a graham cracker crust that has pieces and crumbs of the graham crackers and butter and sugar. And
it's a nice thick crust.
Fairly thick, mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yeah. And it's made by hand by the same person in the key lime pie room day after day. I mean, Bob is the one that does that, Robert.
Boy, you must get tired of key lime pies if that's all he does.
You know, but I'm not tired of the smell. My office is right next door, so it smells great. And then the filling, the filling doesn't smell as great as the
chocolate.
As
the graham crackers
the
and
graham
the sugar.
Crackers, gotta be, yeah. It smells so good. But the other ingredients are the key lime juice, obviously, the egg yolks, and the sweetened condensed milk. And there's two bakings. You cook the crust first. Doesn't take too long. And then you pour the mixture into that and bake that for a while.
There is a story that reminds me of where Stephen can actually make the pies for the restaurant if he had to. There was a gentleman, Stephen, who was doing the key lime pie for years.
Right. That was Polly Wilson Sr. He was making them for...
What a wonderful career.
That's all he
yeah.
did.
Well, yeah, it's from starting from 6 in yeah. the morning till the wee hours. And during one of his breaks, he took a break because he worked till almost midnight. While napping on the cot, he passed away. And he'd started Joe's in 1956. Mm-hmm. And this was in 1995. And he had been making the pies since 1968.
And no one else knew how to make them.
Well, Mom did. It was her recipe, but she was on a cruise.
So what impressed me, I have to interrupt you there, because what impressed me, and this is what's very cool about Stephen, is that he somehow calculated how many pies were needed to feed the customers at Joe's for lunch and for dinner until his mom came back because until somebody could be found to replace Paul to make the pies so that there would be enough. And if there were not enough, he would have started making them himself.
Oh, sure. Sure.
So in other words, he had enough in the freezer to know. So you know how
he
many pies you're going to serve at the restaurant?
We keep track of all the items that we sell. So we knew how many pieces per day. And this was in February during the boat show, which is not when you want to run out anyway.
Oh my goodness.
It was mid-February and it was like around the 12th or 13th of right around Valentine's Day too. And Mom was due back in like a little over a day, like 2 days. And we had just enough. And in fact, the very first thing I said to her, I was waiting for her at her condo, was, I got some bad news.
Oh, she didn't know.
She didn't know about
right.
Polly. Yeah.
Right. And it just seems to me that everyone is your family who work there.
Right.
You feel for every single one.
Especially Polly.
On an average night, how many pounds of stone crabs do you go through?
Well, among the sizes, we do serve at least four sizes. A little over 1,000 pounds in the restaurant. And then you have to include takeaway
right.
and shipping.
And about how many people do you serve a night?
close to 1,200, 1,300, somewhere in there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, it's really been a very, very, very tasty week.
Indeed.
We've all loved it. Stephen Sawitz, thank you so much for joining us and for that special food from Joe's. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And congratulations once more on Joe's 100th anniversary. Deanie Kaplan-Lorber, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
Her book is Waiting at Joe's, and it's a charming look at the inner workings of Joe's Stone Crab. And I think it's available everywhere, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Everywhere.
Everywhere and at Joe's, I suppose.
And at Joe's, of course.
So very right. Well, next week we'll be talking about the invention of the American meal with the author of the book Three Squares, Abigail Carroll. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.